Thank you, Arthur. Thank you very much. And John Carr, many of you know, is the director of the Initiative on Catholic Social Thought and Public Life at Georgetown University. It's also important to know that for over 20 years, he was the director of the Department of Justice, Peace, and Human Development in the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops. So we asked John to give us his perspective on this matter, and then we'll get into the Q&A.
How would you like to follow Dr. Robitaille and Mr. Brooks? This is a classic case of admiration trumping intelligence. I very much admire Arthur Brooks, and I know it's a really bad idea to follow him and in some ways to offer an alternative view. But I'm delighted to be here because not only of Arthur, but Michael. Michael is a bridge builder in a town that doesn't build bridges, and we need that. I'm happy to be here because of who you are. Journalism is tough work. Serious journalism is even tougher work. Serious journalism about faith and public life is rare work, and it's really important, and I am grateful to you for doing it and to be a part of this good discussion. I'm also grateful because of where I am not. Michael said I worked for 25 years at the Catholic Bishops Conference. They are assembled in Baltimore this week. Some of you were able to come here instead of going there. We have made the better choice. I loved working for the bishops. It was a great job. I saw the strength and vitality of our church's ministry, a lot of the things that Arthur talked about. But it was not always easy. I worked there during the sexual abuse crisis. They are not the happiest campers. When limbo went into limbo, and for those of you who don't know about limbo, we'll discuss it over the cocktails, I said to one of the bishops, I never understood limbo. I don't know what happened to those babies, and I don't feel bad that it's gone. But do not mess with purgatory, because working for you has to count. So I'm not missing that. This situation of following these two remarkable people reminds me the last time I was in Miami Beach. And for some reason that I don't understand, I was offered an honorary degree at Berry College, for university now, it's sort of great inflation. And I was told I didn't have to do anything. All I had to do was show up and smile. I didn't even have to say thank you. And as we lined up outside the Miami Beach Auditorium, 8,000 people, 100 degrees, the MC came up to me and said, Mr. Carr, please no more than 15 minutes. And I said, you've got this wrong. I'm not the speaker. I'm getting an honorary degree. I was told I wasn't even allowed to say thank you. And I turned around to the president of the university, and I said, tell him, I'm not the speaker. And she said, we like to keep it spontaneous. Well, that's how I feel. I got a PowerPoint. I got a framework. I got notes. This is going to be spontaneous. I'm not a Christian economist. I'm not even a Christian on some days. But I did. The one thing I have over Arthur is I once had the most pompous title in Washington. How would you like to be Director of Social Development and World Peace for the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference? I was once introduced to a couple of them and said, he's in charge of social development and world peace. And she looked at me and said, you need to do a better job. Well, I think what we're talking about this afternoon is how in the richest country on earth do we do a better job of lifting people up over poverty? One of the things I really agree with Arthur, it's in the book, you didn't talk about it here, and this gets me in trouble with some of my liberal friends. I think the moral imperative is not economic inequality. It's not the gaps. They're serious. I think they have lots of social, political impact. I think the moral imperative is to lift people up from the bottom. I think the fact that some people have so much money and use it badly is more a spiritual problem than a public policy program. We may have to talk about the right kind of taxation and all that, but I think for moral reasons, for economic reasons, frankly, for political reasons, the focus ought to be on lifting people up at the bottom. We're going to have bipartisan divided government for a long time. I think we can build sufficient consensus to actually do something to lift people up at the bottom. So what I want to do in just 15 minutes, 30 I think, so I have about 25 left, is talk about the role of the religious community in doing that. I am not going to review or rebut Arthur. First of all, I agree with a lot, almost everything he said. There are some differences. I would like to repeat a couple of the things he said, which I think ought to be the focus on common ground. One is lifting people out of poverty is a pressing moral, political, policy priority. And I watched the Democratic debate the other night. It ended early. Someone explained that to me. But it wasn't until the last 2 minutes where someone perfunctorily mentioned the poor or poverty. In the Republican debate, they've talked about everything else but. There is a silence on poverty in this country, and there is a stalemate, an unproductive, unreal, unhelpful stalemate between people who talk mostly about the family factors that leave people poor and people who talk mostly about the economic factors that leave people poor. The way in which Arthur and I got together is we did with the National Association of Evangelicals, Southern Christian Leadership Conference was mentioned, a bunch of other people, we did a summit on overcoming poverty at Georgetown. 50 evangelical leaders, right to left, 50 Catholic leaders, right to left, 50 policy wonks, allies, advocates, right to left. And we invited the President of the United States. And we thought not a chance would he come, because we asked him not to give a speech. We asked him to be part of a discussion.
Be spontaneous.
Well, and about 5 days before the event, we got word that the President wanted to come. For those of you who know academic life, I've only been there a couple of years. It's my first exposure to that. We could only tell two people the President was coming, and one of them said, he can't come that day because that is the day we set up chairs for graduation. Not graduation, set up chairs. And we had a voice of who would be on that stage with the President. And it was Robert Putnam, Arthur Brooks, E.J. Dionne was the moderator. If you want to hear a robust discussion of a variety of points of views, Google that. I actually think if you lock those people in a room for a day and a half, we could have a plan. Unfortunately, we don't have those rooms in Washington. Here are a couple of things I really agree with Arthur on. The moral priority of this, the centrality of work, and candidly, nobody is talking about work. The President doesn't talk about it. The candidates don't talk about it. Advocates don't talk about it. One person who does talk about it is Pope Francis, who says this is absolutely central. The role of community institutions, as he described, and I think the defense of the safety net is a really important starting point for conservatives. For progressives, a really important starting point is the role of family structure and strengths and stability. And often they don't go there. I actually think Arthur's book is misnamed. I don't think it's about the conservative heart. I frankly think it's about the American heart or the Christian heart or the Catholic heart. Strip away some of the partisan messages and ideological packaging. I think these values are very much at the heart of who we are and what we believe. He resists stereotypes and disputes the stereotypes of conservatives. I think he creates some regarding some progressives. There are a lot of foreign aid programs that are entrepreneurial programs. In celebrating the achievements of free enterprise, he minimizes some of the contributions. It is true in India and China that the free market has made. In Africa, debt relief and HIV/AIDS programs and the education of women have made a huge contribution as well. It's not only government that treats people as commodities, business sometimes treats their workers as commodity. In celebrating private rescue efforts, I think all of us ought to be aware that in every community, there are churches and charities and nonprofit agencies and, yes, government agencies that use the safety net as a launching pad, not as a way to extend dependency, and we ought to congratulate them. It is not only the great society that has left some people behind, it is also tough love welfare reform. We still have concentrated poverty. But I think Arthur is one of the most important leaders, not only in his party and his movement in America. And I wish somebody, you advise candidates, I wish they took your advice and shared it more broadly. I hope his party and all of us listen. I think there is a moment here where maybe after this election we could get together. The title was New Approaches to Poverty. What's not new? Pervasive poverty is not new, the numbers Arthur talked about. The silence is not new. We went in to meet with President Obama, and one of our bishops said, Mr. President, I know you're a Christian. I know you read the Bible. Where I'm from, Matthew 25 says, whatsoever you do for the least of these, you do unto me. Apparently in Washington, it's whatsoever you do for the forgotten middle class, you do unto me. And the president says, I think you got us on that. One of the things that I think bodes well is the president is now talking about poverty more, is talking about our brother's keeper and the rest. I think the economic and the moral and the human costs of inaction, indifference, are becoming more apparent. This new study, it's always been true that African-American and Latino life expectancy lags behind white. We now have this study which says that for working class white women and men, life expectancy is actually going down. Pope Francis says this economy kills. It turns out it does. So what is the message? What could we unite around? I think it is the moral, the policy, and the political imperative of AND. Family and economic factors in poverty. Personal responsibility and broader social responsibility. Questions of race and class. Discrimination and opportunity. Work and wages, rights and responsibility, in Catholic terms, solidarity and subsidiarity, in religious terms, Catholics and evangelicals, and amazingly, I think, wonks and believers. There is a remarkable effort underway, AEI is a part of it, to get progressive and more conservative scholars, analysts, advocates, to try and work together to come up with some ideas we could use. I have a lot in the PowerPoint from Jesus. It's really important to remember Professor Robitaille talked about Luke 4. The mission, and Arthur put it in different words, is the words from Isaiah and Luke that he described. To bring good news to the poor, liberty to captives, new sight to the blind, and set the downtrodden free. A lot of times people say, we agree on the principle, it's just the remedies that we disagree. It's just strategies. I don't think there's much evidence that we agree on the principle that overcoming poverty is a major national priority, that the poor ought to come first. I don't think that's true in either of our political parties, certainly not the priority of the Senate Finance Committee. I think one of the reasons we have a chance to move forward is Pope Francis. Another reason is, frankly, AEI and Arthur Brooks. Another reason is Robert Putnam and his remarkable book. and the Center for American Progress, which is a liberal think tank that is doing some remarkable work here. And I think our summit contributed a little, and we'll be following up. So if the message is and, morally, politically, and policy-wise, what does that take? Think about overcoming poverty, and this is a very simplistic. I'm not an economist. When I was in the band, I played the trombone, and the band director asked me not to play during the solos. That's how bad I was. So mine is a more simplistic metaphor. Think of a table with four legs. The first leg is individuals and families. Sacrifice for kids. Stay in school. Don't have kids till you're ready. Get a job. Stay in school. The Brookings has this famous piece of data. It shifts over time. But if a child is born into a family where somebody works, where somebody graduated from high school and waited to have a baby until they were married, they have an 8% chance of growing up in poverty. You reverse that, it's 80%. So there is a lot of personal, individual responsibility that's needed here. And we need to support people, and frankly, the religious community has a lot to say about what we ought to do there. The second leg of that table is community supports, churches, faith-based is the way we talk about it, neighborhoods. That support families, help them make those choices. Frankly, fight injustice, fight disinvestment in local communities. The mediating institutions that conservatives talk about. Two of the mediating institutions that get neglected in our discussion are labor unions and community organizations. I share Arthur's critique of some of the policies of teacher unions. And we can talk about that. The people making our bed, cleaning our room, need someone to stand up for them. The people in healthcare, doctors have power, insurance companies have power, hospital administrators have power, even nurses have power. Orderlies, nurses' aides, janitors need somebody who can stand up for them. So those are some of the community organizations. One of the issues that progressives need to face up to is we very much celebrate the good work of community and faith-based institutions. But the same faith that requires us to care for the least of these, to empower the poor, also tells us that the unborn are human beings and ought to be protected. That traditional marriage ought to be continued. And there's going to have to be a way that organizations who have the same position on same-sex marriage that President Obama had 2 years ago can continue to serve. There are not a lot of ACLU chapters in Anacostia or in the bush in Africa. And we're going to have to find a way to balance some competing claims here. A third leg of the table is the market, free enterprise, Arthur calls them. And Pope Francis, when he spoke to the Congress, showed he'd been listening, talked about the power of the market. But there are some things the market doesn't provide very well or protect very well. Environment might be one of those things. I am completely committed to a central focus on work, but work has to be able to help you raise a family. And so the combination of wages and things like EITC and the child tax credit, which we support. Work has to be a way to live in dignity, not another form of poverty. And the fourth leg of the table is government at every level. And the safety net, and I admire Paul Ryan and I admire Arthur Brooks for standing up and saying we need a robust and compassionate safety net. It doesn't get a lot of applause. But there is a debate about where and how to deliver these services. We've actually had a whole series of conversations with Mr. Ryan. I frankly regret that he's speaker, even though that might give him greater influence, because as chair of the Ways and Means Committee, he might have been free to advance some of these ideas. But I said to him, you are very clear about some of the failures of the federal government, some of the bureaucratic excess, some of the inflexibility. You are very naive about local and state government in some areas. Alabama and Mississippi is not Wisconsin and Minnesota. I live in Prince George's County. Our last two county executives are in jail, one with his wife and the other with his girlfriend. Our last school superintendent went to jail. No strings money to those people to deliver social services is not a solution to the problems of the federal government. There also has to be protection against discrimination and injustice and regulation where necessary. The problem with Washington, in my experience, is everybody is in love with one leg of the table. So you have the personal responsibility caucus, you got the faith-based caucus, you got the free enterprise caucus, and there's even a few people still left in the government caucus. The Catholic tradition, the Christian tradition, I think the religious voice brings those things together. What I think the religious community brings are not the traditional assets. We don't make campaign contributions, we don't endorse candidates, you won't get a junket out of us, but we have different assets. We have a set of ideas about human life and dignity, about human rights and responsibility, about the priority for the poor. They give you a different way of looking at the world. The best way to describe Pope Francis is he looks at everything from the bottom up and the inside out. The economy, the environment, the church. So we have a set of ideas, and they don't fit the categories of right and left, Democrat or Republican. The second thing we have is experience. Who feeds the hungry? Who shelters the homeless? Who cares for immigrants? Who educates poor kids really well? Who welcomes refugees? Catholic community, religious community is the largest non-governmental provider of human services, education, and healthcare in the nation. My experience is that when we make our case to policymakers, it's often far more important what we do than what we believe. Thirdly, we have presence. We have structures. An organizer friend of mine said to me, "You Catholics are terrific. You divide up the world and you call it yours." In a real sense, you know, what is it, 18,000 parishes, 9,000 schools, 700 hospitals, and you can talk about the Baptists and the Lutherans and whatever. We are in every congressional district. We are urban and rural. We're in the Black community. We're in the Latino community. The Black church is a very powerful voice. So we have presence. We also have people. There are a lot of us. Again, speaking as Catholic, there are, what, 70 million Catholics, supposedly? About 25%, you would know better than I do, go to church on any given Sunday. So what is that? Maybe 20 million people on any given weekend spend an hour worshiping God, trying to be better people. What would MoveOn.org give for that? What would the Tea Party give for that? And we have leaders. And I think Pope Francis is a remarkable leader. On your PowerPoint, which is really well done, and it's lovely pictures, I stayed up really late putting them all together, there's a couple quotes from Pope Francis that are really interesting. One is, and he challenges both progressives and conservatives, and he talks about overcoming poverty as a moral priority, and he says, economic growth is not enough. The market by itself can't do this. And then he says, and this has to move beyond a welfare mentality. So I think what we're saying is business as usual. You know, if we get the economy growing, we'll be okay. And, or if we had a real safety net, we'd be okay. That does not reflect the dignity that Arthur talks about, more importantly, that each of us feel. So my sense is there is a moment here, and the religious community can play a major, major part of this. I've spent my life, I'm not an economist, I spent my life as an analyst and advocate for Catholic social thought. I come from a mixed marriage. Both my parents are Minnesota Catholics, but my mother is from St. Paul and my dad from Minneapolis. That's a bigger deal than you know. My mother's family committed Republicans. My uncle was a Republican leader of the Minnesota State Senate. My grandfather was Hubert Humphrey's finance chairman when he ran for mayor of Minneapolis. For those of you who don't know, Hubert Humphrey was the vice president of the United States. I learned at an early age that we can act on our values in different ways than different parties. So if we put together our ideas, our experience, our institutions, our people, our leaders, we can make a difference. The summit was a chance to do that. We actually got people who don't agree on everything to agree that this ought to be a priority. I gave a talk, and I'll conclude with this, in upstate New York to a group of business leaders. And I thought I had done a wonderful job summarizing the themes of Catholic teaching on economics. This is a great crib sheet for you. All before Francis, BF. Pope John Paul II and Benedict don't get enough credit for the leadership they provided on these issues. But I thought I'd just done a splendid job, and most folks were very kind, complimentary. But one guy was terribly upset, and unfortunately he was the president of the group, and I was seated next to him. And I said, "You seem unhappy. What's the problem?" He says, "You don't want to know." And by then I didn't want to know, but I said, "No, what?" He said, "I'm tired of all this talk about the poor, the unborn, immigrants, solidarity. Is there anything in those encyclicals for me? I pay taxes. I work hard. I use my envelope every Sunday. Is there anything for me?" And I talked about Mother Teresa. I talked about Matthew 25. I quoted the Pope. I was getting nowhere. And I said, "What do you do? You said you work hard." He said, "I'm a lawyer." Turns out he was the managing partner of the major law firm in that city. And I said, "You said you work late. Do you ever come across the person who cleans your office?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Well, tell me about her." He said, "Well, I don't know much about her. She's from another country, I think South America. She's been doing it a while." I said, "What do you pay her?" He said, "Well, actually, we don't pay her. We hire a firm. They hire her." I said, "Come on, what did she get paid for scrubbing the toilet, vacuuming the rug, dusting your desk?" He said, "Probably minimum wage." I said, "Does your firm have a health plan?" He says, "Yeah, good one. It covers families. Costs more and more each year." I said, "Can the woman who cleans your office, can she take her kids to the doctor when they get sick? Is she part of your plan?" And he said, "I told you, we hire them, they hire her. No, she's not a part of our plan." He said, "Well, what are you getting at?" And I said, "What I'm getting at, this is not about politics. This is not about AFL-CIO or Chamber of Commerce, Democrats or Republicans. This is about whether the woman who cleans your office, whether she and her husband can raise their kids in dignity, and whether they can take their kids to the doctor." And he looked at me and said, "Why didn't you say so?" I think the challenge for the churches, for leaders like Arthur, for our politicians, and frankly for people who cover these issues, the silence is not restricted to politics. It's hard to find coverage of these issues in our media. Our challenge is to share the facts, the challenge, the priority that Arthur talked about, the fact that we can and will make a difference, and the fact that we ought to get out of our boxes and put together what individuals and families do, what community institutions do, what the market can do, and what government can do, and we'll be a better community, a more faithful community, and we'll be proud of the society we're part. I just got a call, and I asked for your prayers. We have four kids, four grandchildren, fifth one on the way, and my daughter-in-law has preeclampsia, which means that there's stuff going on, and she was just admitted to the hospital, and it's way too early. And so I asked for your prayers. She will get the best care in the world. Linda and I will be all over this. I have every confidence that she and that baby will get the best chance they can. But we live in a country where that doesn't belong to everybody's grandchild. And as Arthur said, that's not right, and we can do better. Thank you.